Right, well, the tape is rolling.
Glad to hear it. Hi, I'm Simon Mercer. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to music, film, television, theatre, in fact, anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And actually, to be fair, it's a few things that haven't entertained us as well
really,
this week, isn't it? Yeah, because we've got the good, we've got the indifferent, we've got the flat-out corny when we're looking at film releases. So we've got the crime drama Widows and, oh dear, I have lost count what episode we're up to in Rocky. That saga, but yeah, it's Creed 2 this time, isn't it?
Yes, Creed 2 and maybe Rocky about 16 and a half or something, I don't know.
Yeah, who cares at this stage?
Yes. Now, one of the biggest entertainment franchises of the 21st century, I kid you not, is also on our radar, but the latest iteration of the Harry Potter story, courtesy of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, who came up with that title, put one of us to sleep, truly.
Quite literally, yes. And also, get away from film for a second, going to music. Despite being one of the hottest performers on the planet right now, we'll discuss why one of us couldn't bear to stay to the end of Pharos, which is the festival offering from Donald Childish Gambino Glover.
Now, there's a story to be told. But let's start, shall we, with a confession.
It's good for the soul, Simon.
It is. I'm going to cleanse myself here. It was, in fact, me who nodded off during Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, not just because it takes so long to say the title.
Yeah, and the thing about that, really, I mean, this has got to... I think that's probably the worst thing you can say about a film, because it wasn't even bad enough to capture your attention. If you fell asleep during it, then I mean, what are we saying here? Was it just that boring?
Well, I've set this up, haven't I, but I have to be a little bit... measured and tell you that I did go to see an evening session, Mr. McCabe, and I had, believe it or not, a long and busy day, and not being as young and as energetic as I once was, that all may have contributed to my slight sense of drowsiness. Plus, I'll be honest, I took in some baggage into this film because I remember being disappointed by the first Fantastic Beasts film, and that just kind of lingered in the back of my mind. Plus, I think if you don't recall the first film in some detail, this second one charges out of the gate throwing all sorts of characters and situations at you that you really need to recall from the first film. And if you don't, you're going to be struggling to catch up and keep up with the first part of the storytelling. And I didn't. So put all that together and I kind of lost interest and it all went downhill from there.
So basically you were set up for failure for this film from the start, really, weren't you?
Yeah, on a number of fronts. But to you, I mean, are you in a contrary position? Were you gripped by this cinematic delight?
I stayed awake.
Well, that's good.
That's about the best I can say about it, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
I mean, look, here's the thing. At this point in the review, it is customary to do a brief plot synopsis, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Go on, then. Off you go. Let's hear it.
No, I can't.
Exactly.
I don't even know where to begin.
So that's the first problem, is we've got... I mean, there wasn't so much a story in it as there was a series of set pieces that didn't necessarily belong in the same coherent narrative. You've got something to do with Johnny Depp, who's the titular Grindelwald, or Grindelwald, apparently, as we're pronouncing it, who it turns out, apparently, is Wizard Hitler. It turns out that's done quite unsubtly. So Wizard Hitler is trying to get a new world order going where the pure blood wizards apparently rule the world.
Yes.
But that's very, very much in the background. That's very secondary. You've then got, now I could well be getting this wrong, but for some reason we're in Paris now, at the Ministère de Magique, or whatever they're calling it. But I don't know. I genuinely didn't know what was going on half the time.
And
I had Debbie, our intrepid guest reviewer, sitting next to me. And a couple of times she leaned over and she said, what's going on? And I'm thinking, I haven't the faintest idea either.
Oh, thank God you're saying this, because I was worried it was just me.
No, it's an incoherent mess, isn't it?
I mean... We should try and say a little bit more about the plot, but I don't know really how to say it. I mean, there was a character from the first film, this young sort of up-and-coming wizard that the Grindelwald is trying to contact and corrupt to his own purpose, isn't he?
Yes.
And then the good guys are trying to stop that from happening. But
this is Credence, isn't it? I think. I can hear in your voice you've lost the will, haven't you? You don't care.
I don't really care. It was. I heard one other person say it was just like a middle chapter where they're trying to set things up for the grand finale, and it did. I suppose that's fair, but it's still got to engage you and make you care about what's going on. And I didn't really. We're not saying much about the plot. I'm sorry about that, but it's. I just thought it was a lot of, a lot of little set pieces going from one to the other, I think I've seen so many magic. Courtesy of CGI, Steve, so much magic shown on screen now, it's kind of washing over me and it doesn't really grab me with the same degree of surprise and delight as it might once have, in the early Harry Potter days. It's all...
No, I'm with you on that one. I mean, on a technical level, it's very, very clever and it's very impressive. Yeah. But all that stuff should only ever be there to support the storytelling. If you haven't got the storytelling to be supported, then that stuff is wasting its time, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said earlier... is very, very true that unless you saw the first film last week and it's really fresh in your memory, there's no attempt to reintroduce characters.
No, not at all.
So, ideally, and I mean, this is going to be the case in the Marvel films. Yeah, they are meant to form all part of the same universe, but each film should, to a degree, stand on its own. And while you might not get the full impact. If you're not completely up to speed with the rest of the universe that the film occupies, you should at least come away from it going, that was a coherent whole. This, not even remotely, like you say, it was an episode, and it felt like turning the TV on and watching episode 27 of a 45-episode series where you're expected to know. I mean, Debbie turned to me as we were coming out and said, "What's an aura?"
Right.
And I said, well, if I remember correctly, they're like wizard detectives. And he said, oh, okay, I had no clue.
Yeah.
And there's a big significance of the fact that one of them is an aura. And she kept but if you didn't know what one of those was, then the whole thing was lost on you. It was meaningless.
I think that's true. And the sort of Eddie Redmayne character, Newt, one of the things I think this is one of the issues with this whole series of films. One of the... one of the attractions of the Harry Potter film, Steve, was that, it was about kids and it was aimed at kids and you had a great cast supporting those children. But it was pretty much an adventure told through children's eyes.
Yes.
And the books introduced lots of kids to reading. And so it was a kind of a family thing. And it was great. I mean, it may not have been great literature and superb storytelling, but at least it was relatable. Whereas I think they're trying to sort of carry on with the saga, but they've left the kids out, effectively. The closest they get is the character of Newt, who's sort of a young adult who's a bit shy and socially awkward. But that doesn't have the same connection, I don't think, with a broad audience.
No.
Despite Eddie Redmayne's acting prowess, I don't think it's a well-written character for that purpose. Yeah. And so it just falls a bit flat for me.
Well, speaking of Eddie Redmayne's much-vaunted acting prowess, he obviously left it at home that day. all he does is he sort of mumbles through the language with the thought of slightly lispy, sort of whining. There were times when I was struggling to understand what he was saying. Look, here's the thing. When J.K. Rowling first wrote the Harry Potter stuff, I mean, I'm sure she had in the back of her mind, wouldn't it be magnificent to get this made into a film one day? But it started out life as a book and then several books. And apparently, she did actually have the entire arc of the whole seven book series in her mind when she wrote it. But she wrote a book that was very, very richly developed, and then someone took it and developed a screenplay out of it. And I said the same thing after the first Fantastic Beasts film. That's what she needed to do this time. She started out with a screenplay, and she is a very talented novelist. She's clearly able to crank out a good novel. And then from that, a good film can be made. She's not a screenwriter. She's not a from-scratch screenwriter. I was very disappointed. I mean, here's another thing. With this film, how much actual Fantastic Beastness was there?
Yeah, there was not much. There's a big scene in a sort of a interior lake or pool with a sort of sea creature, isn't there? I remember that sequence. But beyond that... Not a lot, really.
The beasts themselves are quite incidental. And name me a single crime committed by Grindelwald.
Oh, he just looks bad, and his acting isn't much better. Is that a crime?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, they can't rename it the cinematic crimes of Grindelwald, can they? Although maybe they should. But even the title makes no sense.
No, it's off. I think this film would have gained an audience because people would be curious to see where they're taking the story from the first one. But I think they're going to be losing a lot of followers as a result of the second film. And
there will be a third, obviously, because like you said, the sort of moving the chess pieces into position is one comment I heard. So there will be a third film. You know it'll sell well. And do you know the worst thing is? You and I are going to have to go and see it.
But you know what I'm going to have to do, though? I'm going to have to go back and watch the first two to just try and figure out what the heck is going on. When I see the third one, I know what to look out for.
Right, well, you and I are going to have to meet for a beer before we watch the third one so you can fill me in.
Right, okay, that's a deal.
Because I'm buggered if I'm going back and watching the game.
Yeah, no. This is a really selfless devotion to the cause of Crave to do.
My commitment to the Crave cause knows limits, and that's it right there.
Okay, all right. Now I think we should say neither of us were at all impressed with this, and we begrudgingly look forward to having to see the third episode.
Yeah, don't buy a ticket. Just don't do it. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Now, I gather, Mr. McCabe, that you were similarly unimpressed, and that's really disappointing to hear when it comes to Donald Glover, because this is a man who, whether it's using that name as an actor or his alias of Childish Gambino, he's grabbed a lot of attention around the world lately with music videos and whatnot. He's been in Auckland, but what sort of show did he put on?
I don't know. And that's not a flippant offhand comment. There's actually a big build up before I can answer that question. But I genuinely don't know what kind of show it was. It started out as it was being billed as a festival called Pharos, and apparently this festival has been held in the Joshua Tree National Park in California.
Yes.
And Auckland was going to be the second venue ever.
Okay.
Very nice. And so they initially announced that he would be playing. The nearest airport will be Auckland Airport. So people rushed out and bought tickets through the app that they sent out to people's phones. And then eventually they announced that the venue would be Tapapakanga National Park on the Firth of Thames.
Okay. Right.
Fine. Yes, it's a very nice part of the world.
Yes.
Not terribly accessible, you know. It's a good hour from the airport.
Yeah.
It's a long way from the city centre, so... So, yeah, but it's very nice. So we got there on the Friday night. They're going to be doing this over three separate nights. So so I got there with Debbie, the intrepid guest reviewer, and some of our friends. And we got there on Friday night. And we'd already sort of looked at the app to see what to expect. And the app, I'm not making this up. I mean, seriously. Here's what the app says about Pharos. It tells us, I'm looking at the app now, I'm clicking on the guidebook link. And it tells us that Pharos... Time is the only freedom. Trust the great algorithm. It asks the questions, who are we? Where are we from? Why are we here? It tells us Pharos is a holy place. It is a shared vibration for human progress. And it is a gathering of the five intuitives of the human experience. So that's what the show was being billed as, right? So we showed up. And it also said that they were going to be coming on stage at about 9 o'clock. So we got there, and there's a wee sort of fieldy area that's got a couple of food trucks, and it's got the support acts, which is EDM people, people playing records and chanting over them, and it was physically uncomfortable. It was so loud. The sort of bass that you can feel in your thoracic cavity. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
It was unpleasant, but we realised quite early on that there was a huge queue to get into the big dome tent where presumably. Your man himself was going to be playing.
Yeah.
So we got into the queue, and it took us about an hour and 20 minutes to get through the queue where they were handing people bags which would impound their cell phones for the duration of the show.
Right.
Which is why we've got no photos, and I didn't get to do what I like to do in these reviews, which is have a little bit of a music play out when we finish talking about it. So
yes.
It's approached as well, really, to be fair.
Yeah. Yes.
Because eventually we got into this dome tent, And he finally came on stage at 10:30.
Oh, right, 10:30.
Yeah,
okay, not nine.
No, not nine, not 9:30, not even 10. 10:30, he finally came on stage. At least I think it was him, it was hard to tell. Because when I say stage, I'm talking about a platform that was probably about 2 feet high.
Oh.
I'm a big chap, I'm 6'3". I could barely see him on the stage.
Okay.
But then again, I could barely hear him either. Sound quality was abominable. It was so loud that you were struggling to hear individual instruments, his voice. I couldn't hear what he was singing half the time. When he finally did cut through the mix, he sounded like a second-rate Prince tribute act who was rehearsing Michael Jackson cover songs.
Mm.
It was just not very good from start to finish. And usually, I'm a bit of a cynic about these things, but usually Debbie, our intrepid guest reviewer, is usually altogether the cheerleader for you know, young people's music.
Yes.
She usually represents the young ones for us. And even Deb, I have to tell you, was less than impressed. Don't believe me? Ask her yourself.
I shall. Yes, Debbie, we look to you for giving us that young person's perspective on some of the pop music that Steve and I don't necessarily want to go and see. And you've done a fantastic job for us covering some of these wonderful modern pop artists. Yes. But I mean, Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, I mean, he's a pretty hot guy around the traps these days.
Do you
share Steve's disappointment?
Well, I don't share all of his sentiments, so hopefully I'll give a little bit more of a nuanced report.
Yeah.
I wanted to love this, just so you know. I bought my ticket, oh my gosh, it must have been a year ago, and some friends and I were sitting around in a cafe at lunchtime, and we all started talking about it and thought, oh, this is going to be just amazing. We have to get tickets. So we all opened up our phones and downloaded the app and, you know, looking at the app and like, oh, we get to wear green. Everyone has to wear green. It's the color, you know, the hue that we have to wear.
It's the vibration, darling, the vibration.
Yeah. So we were all pretty excited about it. At the time when we bought our tickets, they did not tell us where the venue was. So they just said it was near the Auckland airport. So, okay, you know. We found out later that it was actually kind of far away. And it was a friend, myself, and our two daughters who were going. And we felt a little uncomfortable driving there by ourselves. Anyway, Steve, as you know, ended up getting a ticket. So, you know, a reviewer ticket. So that worked out well. But, yeah, so we arrived. And it was a little bit festival-y, but not too much. I was kind of like, okay, I'm looking around thinking, well, where's the other acts? You know, there was the EDM tent, which I actually really liked. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought it added a nice atmosphere to the quasi-festival situation. There was food tents and a merch tent, and I, you know, looked around, didn't get any food, but, you know, did a bit of people watching, and it looked like there was, you know, some really interesting folks there. People seemed really relaxed, really into the vibe. So, you know, I was feeling it. It felt really good. We got into line. There was a huge queue and lots of EDM music playing. And I actually really, you know, I always like waiting in line. I think maybe some of our listeners might know that. I always enjoy waiting in line. I get in line early. I like to queue up early. I like to feel the energy, you know, listen to what people are talking about. And so, you know, I enjoyed that part. So far, so good. It was a little bit unorganized, I thought. You know, it was really, really slow the way they were letting people in. At that point, we didn't really know exactly what was going on. But we got to a point in line when they took our phones, put them into locked bags and handed those back to us, which, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. I like that idea. I've been to one other concert where phones were completely not allowed, and that was the Prince concert. And it was a different experience, to be at a concert without your phone, because I'm obsessively taking video when I'm at concerts. I don't know why. So, we got to the tent area. Yes. As we got towards that area, we asked someone, you know, like, hey, you know, when's he coming on? What's the scoop? And they said, oh, it's magic. And we're like, okay, you know, this is going to be really interesting. The dome looked amazing. So, it was kind of, I was excited about it. I thought it was going to be great. So they were letting 10 people at a time into the dome, which I guess later we heard had something to do with not letting too much of the air out or something in the dome. So yeah, that was cool. So we got inside and we waited and waited and waited. And I couldn't see anything. I'm kind of looking around like, you know, where's the stage? You know, what's going on? I couldn't really see much.
And you're not 6 foot three.
I am not 6 foot three. No, no, no. I'm not short, but I'm certainly not that tall. But, you know, again, I'm kind of paying attention to the people and the atmosphere and all of that. And I thought, you know, so far it was pretty good. I was really looking forward to all this happening. But as it turns out, the reason why I couldn't see the stage is it was quite low. So when Childish Gambino, David Glover, did finally come out with his band, I really couldn't see anything at all. So I started trying to stand up on my tiptoes and kind of, I would occasionally catch a glimpse of him, you know, and I could see maybe one or two of the musicians, their heads kind of, you know, from decolletage up, and I thought, oh, okay. You know,
yes.
This is kind of crazy. So then I started paying attention to the dome and all of the cool graphics that were going on in the dome. And I thought that part was really well done. I really, really liked that. Fortunately, I had some pretty heavy duty musicians earplugs, because without those, I'm not sure I would have survived it. Honestly, the sound was not only super loud, but it was really bad. My earplugs do tend to cut out a lot of the noise, a lot of the, you know, over bass or, you know, stuff like that. So I was really grateful to them, and I pushed them as far into my ears as I could. But yeah, so there came a point when I looked over at a few of my companions and...
Yes. Did their faces tell the story?
Yeah, they didn't seem to be enjoying it. Steve had sat towards the back. I think he just wasn't into it from the beginning, which was different. Like I said, I had high expectations. I thought it was going to be really cool. I loved all the stuff on the app. I thought it was really interesting and fun. And, you know, had they carried through on all that, it would have been brilliant. But anyway, so my friend who was with me, she had gone back to sit with Steve. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm trying really hard to enjoy this, but it's not really happening. Had it been just myself, it probably would have stayed. I tend to stick these things out and, you know, hope for the best, and, you know, something amazing is going to happen and I don't want to miss it. But I realized that the people that I were with was not really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So I turned to them and said, hey, what do you guys think? I can't repeat anything that they said to me. So,
say no more.
Yeah,
say
exactly. No more. so we all decided, all right, let's just head out. So they let us out through one of the airlock, you know, little things, and we got out, got our phones back, you know, got our phones unlocked, realized as we were heading through the sort of festival area that the sound wasn't getting any better. I mean, usually, you know, when you get pretty far away, it starts to sound a little better if, you know, you lose some of that stuff. I still had my earplugs in. It was just really loud, didn't sound a lot better. It wasn't until we really got to the parking lot that the sound started to sound okay, I guess, you know?
Okay. Well,
But yeah, we left and found out later that the lines to get out of the dome were really long because they were letting 10 people out at a time. So I thought, well, I guess I'm glad we left early. The best thing that I heard, I read a few reviews afterwards, and the best thing I heard was somebody said, he sang and played the whole time. And I thought, I think that's what a concert really is. I mean, if that's the best you can say about it, I wanted to like it, Simon, and I just didn't. I would have stayed, but no one else liked it. I wasn't that into it, and it could have been brilliant. That's the best thing I could say about it. Could have been, should have been.
Yeah. Well, just before we pile back into the criticism, just for people who aren't familiar with his music, and I'm not that familiar with his music, are we talking about, is it modern R&B? Is it rap? Is it pop? What would you just, how would you describe the actual music as far as you could make it out?
I'm not overly familiar with his music. I've listened to it in the past, but I guess it's more like modern R&B, I guess.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, that was one of my big objections to it, was when I could make out what he was playing, there was very little musical coherence to it. He hasn't got any kind of style, signature sound at all. You know, there were moments when he was doing funk. There were moments when he went more toward R&B. There was moments when I thought he was going to start playing "You Got the Look" by Roxette. There was something that sounded remarkably similar to that. I mean, it was a very, very unfocused, very much a sort of a, I'll try doing this next, see if that works kind of approach to music. And I wasn't at all impressed.
So on a very basic level, I mean, some of the key things any concert has to provide, this didn't.
It
You
didn't.
couldn't see
No.
the performers,
And the sound was bad.
and the
So,
sound was bad.
yeah, it's un
So on
unfortunate.
two key indicators, that's a pretty that's a negative on both of
I
those.
would say that is true. I mean, the one thing that it did, I guess, deliver on was, a pretty cool vibe and a great crowd. So.
But that was due to partly to the fact that I don't think I've ever been around so much weed in my life.
Well, if you're going to call a place, a holy place and a shared vibration and the great algorithm, it sounds like you're talking about San Francisco in the hippie era, and maybe that's going to attract people who are wanting to enjoy such an occasion with the assistance of a little extra,
Could be.
whatever.
Could be.
There was definitely some enhanced enjoyment going on there.
Enhanced enjoyment's the word we're looking for. Yes,
Yeah.
yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's all a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, actually, more than a bit. That's very
It is.
disappointing.
Yeah.
And
I
remember,
agree.
this is the girl who finds good things to say about Justin Bieber concerts.
I mean, I think this is a major milestone in the history of the Crave podcast that Debbie has actually gone as far as she has to tell it like it is, Debbie. That's
Yep.
really good.
All
I mean,
right.
one thing that's worth mentioning, just in passing, I mean, the pair of us have talked about the same experience, and we've both ranted at, I think, great and extensive length, but neither of us had very much to say about the music.
No,
That's true,
no.
actually. Yeah.
Which shows how secondary the music
Well,
really
I think
was.
the sound was so bad that you couldn't really get a good sense of the music.
Sound was
Yeah. That
appalling.
was
How could
unfortunate.
they get that so wrong? You really wonder.
I
With
do
a
wonder
modern,
that.
how that's a shocker.
I believe it was only their second,
The second Pharos,
yeah,
yes.
Pharos. There was one in California, I think,
Joshua Tree, yeah.
Joshua Tree, yeah. So I don't know if they had a different experience there,
Yeah,
or
better drugs.
yeah, I mean maybe they just had a better sound system there in California. I really don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good question. I wondered that too. How could they get it so wrong? It should have been a much more professional performance.
Oh, well,
Okay.
lovely.
All
Yeah.
right.
Well,
Well.
thank you, I think. No, thank you
Yeah.
very much. No, it's a
All
shame that it
right.
was like that, but we've got to, we have to cover the good and the not so good on Crave. So,
Indeed. All right.
yeah.
Well, thank you, Simon. Back
No,
to
all good.
Steve.
Thanks very much, Debbie. Right. Well, we've struck out in the first two items, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, has it been, I mean, like I said before, this is supposed to be the podcast about things that have been entertaining you and me recently. Has anything actually entertained us recently, Simon?
Well, actually, I'm very pleased to say I can now turn to a film which I do thoroughly recommend.
Oh, tell me more, because I think we need this. Tell me
We
more.
do. It's called Widows.
Yes.
It's been out for just a few days now. It's a crime drama. It's a very well written, acted, and directed ensemble piece. It's about a heist that goes wrong, and that's nothing new in that sort of a setting, is it? But this is a story, as the title Widows would suggest, is told from a female perspective. So you've got a gang of men. We see the heist in action. We see how it turns out terribly. And all of a sudden, their women partners are widows. And they are left in a terrible predicament because the leader of the gang has stolen from another gang who want their money back. And so the women are given an ultimatum, effectively, pay us or you're in for the chop. And so the women decide they've got to do something, and so they stage a heist of their own. And this is, I suppose that sounds like a reasonably preposterous premise, but it's done with a great deal of grit and sincerity. And the actors are wonderful. I'll come to the actors in a minute. The writers are very good. Steve, you would have heard of the British writer Linda LaPlante, who did Prime Suspect on British TV way back.
Yes.
Widows was actually a British TV crime series in the 80s, I think it was.
Yeah.
So she was involved in that. This has been turned into a movie screenplay by Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl, and also by the director and the screenwriter Steve McQueen, who won Oscars for 12 Years a Slave. So there's a pretty good pedigree behind the creative talent here.
I mean, just on the strength of what you've told me right there, this sounds like a winner of a film already.
Yeah, that's good. And the cast is a really good cast. The women are led by Viola Davis. She's the wife of the boss of the gang, played by Liam Neeson. The other key women are Linda, played by Michelle Rodriguez, and Alice, played by Elizabeth Debicki. I think that's the name. I'm quite sure of the pronunciation. Forgive me. And then the other fascinating character, really lively and appealing character, is Belle, played by Cynthia Erivo, who's a babysitter, but gets caught up in the whole thing and becomes a vital part of the gang. It's not just about the women doing a heist, though.
Yeah.
It's the backdrop of corruption, moral and criminal corruption of the whole setting. It's set in modern day Chicago. There's it's like a by-election going on in a local ward. And the gang who's trying to get the money back from the women is vying to be a local politician and to win this election.
Okay.
So we meet him, and we also meet his rival, who's a long-time got a family stronghold on this ward. The guy running is Jack, played by Colin Farrell. His father's played by Robert Duvall, no less. So you've got that sort of acting talent going into this. So it's quite a layered film. There's quite a bit going on, but it's well told. I didn't find myself getting too confused. Rather the opposite. I was on the edge of my seat, seeing which way they were going to take me. It does turn the traditional thing on its head, because you've got women leading it. It's not done in a condescending way at all. It's not done in a flippant way, like, say, Ocean's 8 was, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You remember we talked about that a while back?
Yeah.
It just reeks of quality, I guess is what I would say. And, yeah, some of the stereotypes are flipped on their heads. You know, the leader of the women is a black woman, Viola Davis. She's the smarts behind it. She's driving it. The woman of the group who's perhaps the most put upon and victimized and is a victim of physical abuse from her husband is a white woman. So they kind of play with some of those old stereotypes we might have been used to seeing in other films, and do it refreshingly well. It's a gripping film. There's quite a bit of violence in it, but it's got some good twists. It's well acted. It's got some integrity, and I really would recommend you see it, and anyone else who's interested in a good quality crime drama.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, the fact that it took you 2 minutes even to get round to mentioning Robert Duvall and Colin Farrell speaks volumes to the caliber of the talent leading the film.
Yeah.
And so I had a very, very busy weekend, and I could only get to see one film, and I picked Fantastic Beasts, and I can't help but feel that I really, really blew that choice.
I think you did, but hey, you're still time. You know what's good about this film is, among other things, Steve, just from the point of view of...
I think there's many things are good about this film.
There's many of it.
Film,
it's a female-driven film, and you've got all these great male actors who really are supporting cast, but do a superb job. The scenes between Robert Duvall and Colin Farrell, there's some sort of father and son bitterness that's really well handled. And they very... this stuck in my mind because must be one of the briefest cameo appearances at all. The actor, American actor called John Bernthal, plays the partner of one of them. He's been in a number of things like The Walking Dead and The Punisher and things like that. He's been around a number of movies.
Right.
His lines, he probably has about a 5 or 6 second line. That's it.
Wow.
But in that brief appearance, he gives us the menace of an abusive husband amazingly well. It's a wonderful example of less is more.
But when you've got someone like Steve McQueen directing it, that's what you're going to get, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, and I forgot to mention Daniel Kaluuya, who, of course, was so great in Get Out.
Yes.
He plays a gang enforcer, and boy, is he a menacing and threatening character. So, look, it's just really very, very good, I thought. Really recommend it. I won't say any more. Here's the thing. I don't know if you remember these films with other crime dramas, but in their day, films like Heat, which had De Niro and Pacino, or Goodfellas, for that matter.
Ooh.
You know, back in the day, they were really well-regarded crime dramas, the very male-oriented cast, male-driven story. I would put the quality of this film on the level of those, except you're flipping it. It's a female-driven story.
If we're invoking Goodfellas, then wow.
Well, I think for me it was. I mean, I thought it was really good, really, really good.
Well, you've definitely convinced me. I will carve out time during the week to see that one because it sounds fantastic. But I know
I hope I haven't oversold it.
Well, yeah, we'll have words next time, Mercep.
Yeah,
you might be owing me $15 at this rate.
Yeah, I might do.
Now, one that I think you're going to struggle to sell me on. I don't think I'm going to be quite as convinced, but go on. Have a go. See if you can convince me to go and see Creed 2.
It'll be a struggle. well, maybe, let me start off by asking you, have you seen any of the preceding Rocky or Creed movies at all?
The Rockies when I was a younger man, yes. Yeah. Okay. Creed. Now, I remember you went to see it and I thought, oh, I've dodged a bullet there. And I kind of let you take one for the team again, haven't I?
Yeah. Well, one of the early Rocky movies was, I think, was it 3 or 4, where we early on in the Rocky series, there's a black boxer called Apollo Creed, right?
Yes.
Rocky boxers. And in another movie, he takes on this Russian huge mountain called Ivan Drago.
Yes.
And is killed by Drago. And as we know from Creed, it's Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed, is played by Michael B. Jordan, who's the subject of the first Creed film. In the second Creed film, he is confronted by the son of Ivan Drago, the man who killed his father. So you've got a sort of revenge type sort of scenario playing out. And that's the premise for the film right there. The actors do a reasonable job. I mean, Michael B. Jordan is a very popular actor right now. We've got Tessa Thompson, who's also done very well lately, playing his partner. Stallone, you know, does what Stallone does, the old sort of now quite old and crusty but good-hearted sort of boxer. Yeah, Dolph Lundgren comes back as Ivan Drago.
Oh,
But the script is pretty corny. The arc of the film is entirely predictable. And you're not going to be surprised by much at all. There's only one thing that I actually got my emotional attention, and that's the character of the son of Ivan Drago. And that's because I felt some sympathy for him, even though he's purportedly the bad guy.
Oh, dear.
Well, okay, he's tall, he's incredibly muscly, he's very powerful, but he is utterly under the cosh of his fixated father, who only wants to win because to get revenge on what Rocky did to him all those years ago. And so we see Ivan Drago mercilessly hounding his son to just, you know, fight, win at all costs. We see the young boxer as a bit of a forlorn character, apparently unloved. When his father lost all those years ago, the mother abandoned him. So he's actually, in a funny sort of a way, I found the most sympathetic character in all this, even though he hardly says a word. He's just got a bit of a doe-eyed, naive, caught in the spotlight, headlights type look about him. So I don't know if that's enough to sell the whole film, but that was something I took from it. And the only other thing is, I don't know what you're like with boxing, Steve. It's a pretty visceral sort of business, isn't it?
Never been a huge fan, to be honest.
No. There's something, though, I don't know what it is. The director does a good job of the actual boxing scenes with the sound effects of the gloves hitting chin and whatever. And there's something quite literally gut-wrenching and adrenaline-pumping about that. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. I could feel my stomach tighten and my pulse rate go up watching the fight. So they do a good job of getting you involved in the actual unpleasant action of a boxing match, and the director's
guy can make for a spectacular cinematic.
I remember
display, can't it?
Yeah, it can.
Let me guess. Did you have the obligatory slow motion close up of glove connecting with face?
I think there was.
I mean, it's a standard shot, isn't it? In a boxing film.
So all in all, it's really formulaic and predictable. It's going to appeal to the nostalgic crowd who will see something from the films of the 80s, plus you've got a new generation bringing it on, you've got some attractive actors involved who'll bring some of the younger people in, but it's not a really substantive, satisfying drama. It's a bit too corny for that, and apart from the odd little attraction here and there, I think it's a overall disappointing addition to the whole franchise, really.
I'm looking at the IMDb page for it here.
Yeah.
And under the user reviews, the very first one, someone's given it, I think, a 10 out of 10 review. It says, amazing,
Wow.
It says, Creed 2 is exactly what I wanted it to be. Such a powerful sequel. This movie is a fast-paced roller coaster of emotions that furthers us into the timeline of the franchise we all love. This is definitely a must-watch. And they've they've started every single word with a capital letter.
Ah.
And I think that kind of speaks volumes, really, in itself. So, well, Simon, you've not met your challenge.
No, and I'm glad I haven't. I would be doing a disservice if I'd managed to persuade you to go and see this. I don't think.
Well, okay. If someone had the choice between this and Fantastic Grindelwald.
Well, I would go for the Creed one, actually, personally.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I would. Even though I'm not. Remember, I fell asleep in Grindelwald. Not much of a comparison, I'm afraid.
No, to be fair, Creed 2 doesn't sound like the kind of film you would doze off during, to be fair.
No. Anyway, look, Steve, apart from this, I've noticed quite a bit of news that you have managed to slip into our website, cravepodcast.com, including a very nice photo gallery that's there, courtesy of a guest photographer. So can you perhaps bring us up to speed with that and what else is going on around the traps?
Well, the photo gallery of which you speak, this is one of our regular guest photography contributors, Rachel Van Loyt, who's shot quite a few shows for us actually now.
Mm-hmm.
That was Red Jumpsuit Apparatus. They're an American sort of post-punk band. Not really my thing, to be honest, but Rachel was dead keen to shoot them for us. And I think she got some cracking shots, in particular... Yeah. Given that she shot them at the Galatos Bar in Auckland, which is notoriously poorly lit. So I think she did a bloody good job, to be honest.
Thank you, Rachel, very much. Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, with regard to what's coming up, there's a couple that will be of great interest to you, I think, Simon.
All right, yes.
We've got Marlon Williams.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Has announced the Turanga YY Tour, which will take him up and down the country. But the only date that we care about is going to be the 16th of February at Villa Maria Winery.
Now, is that the one where he's actually playing with the orchestra, the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra?
I believe, yes.
One of them he is. There might be that one. He's riding pretty high at the moment. He's won a number of awards in the local New Zealand awards, and he even popped up on A Star Is Born, if you recall.
He did.
In a guest spot.
Yes, yeah, his star is in the ascendancy.
Yeah,
His tour has a name in Te Reo Māori.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want an entire tour that's in Te Reo Māori, Alien Weaponry are going to be touring.
Right.
The Tuamata Tauenga tour.
Okay. Well said, sir.
Well, one does one's best. And they've got five dates up and down New Zealand, including the studio in Auckland on the 23rd of March.
Okay.
And also the wonderfully named 50 Gorillas in Dunedin.
Okay. Well, now, look... I've seen them.
Yeah, you were very, very positive about these guys, weren't you?
I was. I mean, they were just so energetic and into it, unabashedly, angrily political, and very heavily, you know, embracing Te Reo language and culture generally. And I thought it was just a refreshing, not easy on the ears necessarily, but a refreshing young person's attack on heavy metal and a local band as well. So, you know, have Debbie's a spare set of Debbie's ear plugs with you just in case. That I would recommend them.
Fair enough then. Possibly other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Norah Jones.
Okay.
Definitely not Alien Weaponry territory here. She's going to be again doing about half a dozen, well, five I think to be exact. She's playing Queenstown among other places. You don't see that very often, do you? But she's also doing the ASB Theatre in Auckland on the 23rd of April.
Okay.
Slightly more toward the Alien Weaponry end of the spectrum, Slayer. I'm sure that's going to float your boat, Simon.
Oh, I'll be just, you know, jumping out of my skin, as you can imagine. Now, they're a much older band than Alien Weaponry, aren't they? They've been around for a decade or two or three.
Oh, they've been playing since I was... Yeah, formed in 81, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, that goes back to my teen years. And they've got supporting them Anthrax.
Okay, they'll be catching.
Very well played, sir. Now, they were one of the big names in thrash metal back when thrash metal was a thing.
Yes.
And they're playing... Now, have you heard of the Event Finder Stadium in Auckland?
I thought Event Finder was just a website to help you find what's going on, but they've got their own stadium as well. Okay, look, I'm not familiar with it. But
no,
it should be.
It was the North Shore Event Centre.
Oh, okay. Right. Yep.
And they've taken over sponsorship, if it would appear. So they're going to be there in March on Friday the 15th, and they're going down to Horncastle and Union Christchurch on the 17th of March. Okay. But I think probably the big name of all the shows that we've had announced just recently, the big name that's coming up in March is the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
They're a big name. And they are, have they done much new material lately? I've sort of lost track of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I remember them in their heyday.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've done...
The press release talks about their current and 11th studio album.
Oh, okay.
Getaway. So clearly they're still recording. But no, I mean, I think, you know, the height of their powers was back in the early 90s with that one album, Blood, Sugar, Sex, Magic.
Yeah.
Which gave us songs like Give It Away, which is obviously one that everyone remembers.
Yeah.
And Under the Bridge, which is a magnificent song. But yeah, they're going to be in Auckland on the 8th and indeed the 9th. They're doing two nights at the Spark Arena.
Okay. Now, Spark Arena.
Yeah, there's very, very, very little in the way of stadium tours.
Yeah. Once upon a time, they would have been booked for Mount Smart, wouldn't they? Surely.
I would imagine there would have been a time, maybe a few years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, they announced one date originally, and it sold out very, very fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I have a feeling that's going to be quite a superb show.
Mm. Excellent. Oh, quite a bit. And of course, the website that we've got here, cravepodcast.com, has a number of other announcements as well. So just feel free to dive in there after the podcast, and many other announcements you can catch up with.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. That's just the edited highlights.
The edited highlights. That's right. Excellent, Steve. Well, that's great. I just wondered, you know, I've got one final thought for you.
Go on.
There was, you know, you and I probably see perhaps more films than your average person because of the nature of what we do. And sometimes we get to see films that are put on by promoters and we go along to a special, you know, screening for reviewers. But often we can't get to those and we end up paying money and going with the general public. So you sit down, you watch a bunch of trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say for the last 3 or 4 months, I've lost count the number of times I've seen a trailer for a new take on the Robin Hood film. And I'm became so utterly, heartily sick of seeing the same sequence again and again and again. It was the film I least wanted to see. And it's just interesting. And I don't know if this was repeated in other markets overseas, but it's just opened in America, I think, in the last few days, and it's completely bombed. And
so
I'm not surprised. Talk about overselling something.
Well, I saw the trailer once. I saw it before Fantastic Beasts, and it looks like. Well, do you remember we saw Arthur?
I know, King Arthur. Yes,
Arthur.
Yes, yeah, that's
a couple of years ago. Yeah,
sort of thing. Yeah,
it looks like it's going to be. Yeah, it's like they didn't learn.
No,
from the mistakes they did. They didn't take our advice and go and have a long, hard word with themselves.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's the same kind of modern sensibilities in the medieval era, massive anachronisms. Oh yeah, and let's put Americans in Sherwood Forest. Yeah, and it looks horrendous. But I know what you're talking about with the trailers. Although, you know, the saturation doesn't always ruin it. Crazy Rich Asians, in the end, I was actually joining in with the words to the trailer because I'd memorized them because I'd seen it so many times. But that didn't hurt the box office for that film, did it?
No, it didn't. No, so there you are. So you just, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
No,
but
I mean,
of course, the hard thing is if there's a film coming up that you want to see and you don't want to see a trailer because you just want to have the pleasure of watching it unfold before you and all the scenes being new to your eyes. Now, that's a hard thing to do in this day and age.
Well, that was Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, okay. And how'd you get on with that?
Couldn't wait to see it. But every single film I saw ahead of it for about 3 months, they did the Bohemian Rhapsody trailer. I was thinking, can we please just see the film? Please.
Yeah.
It was killing me. I mean, I still loved it. But yeah, they do it sometimes, don't they? They really, really wet your appetite a little bit more than it needs wetting.
I think so. Anyway, all good. All right then. Well, that's us for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Good to talk to you. If you would like to get in touch with Steve or I, you can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
We're all over social media. We're on Twitter at Crave Podcast. We're also on Facebook. You can find us anywhere.
Oh, and why wouldn't you want to? So I'm Simon Mercer.
You are indeed. And I'm Steve McCabe.
And you still are. And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Excellent.
Very good.